on page Samach, Perek Yud, Siv Ches. Perek Yud, Siv Ches. We've been learning about Sisrei Torah. There are certain kind of people who are attracted to Sisrei Torah. That feel more naturally attuned to the heartbeat of Pnimius HaTorah. Obviously, those who have strong Netiyos Ruchnius that we've been talking about until now, who are drawn very, very strongly to Ruchnius, naturally, there's going to be more of a need for Pnimius to get to the bottom of things. That's obvious. But then you have another type of person who we spoke a little bit about last week that doesn't naturally find it easy and simple to form a clear rational picture of things. And the intellect, the cold, sharp intellect in this person could be somewhat blurred and dulled. Doesn't mean somebody that's not intelligent, but the koach haseichel. We were talking a little bit about this morning, that koach of seichel of das, to clarify, to make birurim, is not the strongest point in this individual. This too is the kind of a person that is often drawn to Sisrei Torah. That could potentially create many serious problems, because this person is more likely than others to misunderstand, to be excited by Sisrei Torah, to be very powerfully pulled to Sisrei Torah, but then not to quite get it. And they often go together. The longing and the need for Pnimius HaTorah and the intellectual and a certain intellectual handicap when it comes to clarifying the concepts in a sharp and clear way. There are certain people that their teva is more, for lack of a better word, it's more fuzzy. They're fuzzy people. They're more fuzzy by nature. And the fuzziness that opens them up to all kinds of emotions and ideas, and they're excited by Pnimius in a very, 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 in a very beautiful way. Not everything has to make sense to these people. You know, there are certain people that every single thing has to make sense. You're trying to say over, let's say you're trying to say over some beautiful vart from the Nar Mele Malach, and the person's going to say, that's the Pshat in the Pasuk. They're Medayik like it. They're trying to make a Deek. How could the Rebbe Malach say, what does that mean? Then you have fuzzier types that they're not worried about whether or not the dikduk stimmed in the Nar Mele Malach in his pshat in the pasuk. It doesn't bother them. What they're overwhelmed by is the beauty of what the tzaddik is saying, and they're drawn to that in a very deep way. That itself is, of course, wonderful. And Rav Kook is not discouraging. It's not discouraging that. However, there, of course, is some danger in that. There is some greater chance of such a person simply coming to the wrong conclusions, making mistakes. So, yesh ois ches. Yesh shemiyut haseichel mevi es ha'adam l'nestaris. Sometimes Rav Kook says the miyut haseichel brings a person, draws a person to nistaros, meaning not an absence of seichel, but a lower grade intellectual sharpness will sometimes contribute. There are many other factors that draw a person to nistaros. We've been talking about them, but this too, with many people, will be a factor that draws to nistaros. Miyut haseichel maybe is adam nistaros. See, whereas when it comes to the distinctions that are made, when a person is learning, let's say, a blad gemara, when he's learning a Tosfos, a Ramban, a Rosh, those distinctions are very clear and sharp. You know, in Eretz Yisrael, in the school system of Eretz Yisrael, in the public school system of Eretz Yisrael, in the Mamachti schools, they have, I don't know if they still have, but I remember that they, when I lived there, that they had, that in high school already, you would be able to decide whether you wanted to be in the Humani or Reali. Humani or Reali means the humanities. What do you want it to concentrate on? The Humani, the humanities, or the Reali? Reali is interesting. It means, but it means realism. Something realistic. So more math and science. More math and science. Many people from the time that they're pretty young get a sense of whether or not math is something that they either love or they dread. And it's very rare that people have mixed feelings when it comes to math and science. It's very rare. There are people that they're meshuggah for numbers and for math. They love that. They love that. There's nothing it's an olam bara. It is. It's a clear world. It's an olam bara. You can't have, for that person, there's nothing as satisfying as a formula, a calculation working out. There's nothing as satisfying as that. And the reason for that is because it's an olam bara. It's a world that is more clear than everything else in the physical world. Math. Science is hard to say. Science really becomes also fuzzy because there's all kinds of agenda that people have in science. But no matter what your agenda is, you can have a hard time making 1 + 1 = 3. There are politicians that could try to do that and have tried to do that. But for the most part, 1 + 1 has remained for many years, has remained 2. So there's a certain satisfaction that people have that they're in that world of neat, clear, sharp seichel. In the world of learning, these people generally like to consider themselves Maimonideans. You know, they look to the Rambam as the hero of all great thinkers, as we all do, of course. But that's their model of perfection in a human being is the Rambam. Where everything is categorized, everything has to fit clearly into beautiful, neat categories of thought. Then there are others who we understand that the attraction to Sisra Torah is a world that is not mathematical, even though there happens to be a tremendous amount of math involved. And when one goes deeply into the Svarim, the Kisvari, and especially with the Rashash, and with Abulafia, there are different schools in the Midrashim in Kabbalah. There's a tremendous cheshvan with the Shemus and with different things even in Myth. But for the most part, certainly for those who are getting their feet wet, they're not expected to come up with the same clear formulations, the crisp formulations that are demanded of a person who is sitting in a Gemara Shia. In other words, it's not so much a question of right and wrong. You got it or you didn't get it, as it is in when you're learning the Gemara, when you're learning Rishonim. And even though the Gemara, of course, is also Eilu Ve'Eilu Divlekim Chayim, there is that these and those are the words of the living God. What's interesting is in Kabbalah, there's really very little machlokes. I'm not going to go into that now. It's not for our discussion here to go into. There's very little machlokes. The truth is that in Pnimi Sheva Pnimi is the world of Kabbalah, of course, is the Olam Bor, is the clear world. It's a clear world. But intellectually, the demands that it makes of the student are not as rigorous as far as reaching a sharp conclusion, like it is in math or in chemistry or something like that. It's just not. That's the nature of the limud, of the learning. Everything is kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzavakos. So we're going to make a chiluk that God doesn't exist. What's the chiluk? You're going to make such a chiluk. Everything is kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzavakos. You're in that world of Ein Sof Baruch Hu. So, naturally, what happens is, what Rav Kook describes here in this first sentence, Yesh Shemiyut HaSeichel maybe is Adam Lenastaris. The Tavka, the person who doesn't have that intellectual sharpness, feels drawn more to that which is not bound in what is rational, but is in the world that transcends that which is rational. Humani, not reali. The people who are more poetic by nature, poetry is not mathematical, it's not science, even though it has, of course, rhyme, and there's a mahalach, but poetry and literature and so on, these are fields that are not mathematical. So usually there's a different personality. That individual is drawn to studying history and literature is usually very different in many ways from the person who's drawn to studying math and science, or math. It's very different. It's different. They're different bechinas of human beings. Why a person to begin with is naturally inclined to that, naturally drawn to that. There are some kids from the beginning in school, when it starts with the math, from the very beginning they have agmas nefesh. They have agmas nefesh. Math is just a source of agmas nefesh. That's why it's taught in school, mostly to torture people that do not feel comfortable with it. It's a source of agmas nefesh. I've seen it's interesting with half of my children it's agmas nefesh, and the other half it's a breeze. They love it. But that's how it is. They're different people. And then when you take a mathematical person, and you want to share with them something beautiful that you saw, a beautiful poem or a beautiful piece of literature, they look at you like, what's this? What is it about this that you find so inspiring? So you don't see the beauty of this. No, they see the beauty in geometry. The symmetry and the clarity of mathematics, of math, is something which inspires them. They're not inspired by the fuzziness, but they perceive as the fuzziness of the poem. That it could be interpreted this way, it could be interpreted that way, it could be interpreted this way, it could be that. Everybody's right. Anything you say about the poem is right. When you're studying literature and you have to write something about whatever you read, it's that the teacher could mark you wrong. It's not so posh. It all depends if the conclusion that you reach makes some sense as far as the reading of that material is concerned. It's very hard to say that the person is wrong. But if you get a kid that comes and he writes in his test 1 plus 1 equals 3 and the teacher marks him wrong, the kid says, that's my opinion. That's how I feel. So even in 2012, that's not going to fly. I mean, we're getting to that point where it's going to happen. There are things like that already starting to develop. But 1 plus 1, still you can't say it's my opinion that it's 3. So you understand. Maybe it's Adam the Nestaris. In the world of Nestaris, where it's not math. So sometimes those who have weaker intellects are feel drawn to the world of Nestaris that doesn't, at least on the surface, doesn't make such rigorous demands of reaching sharp, sharp conclusions like it would be in a Pshat and Tosfos. One can express his opinion in Tosfos too, but if it's not standing on firm ground of reason and of logic, then you're going to be laughed out of the Beis Medrash. And you could say from the Habes Morgan that this is my opinion. It doesn't mean anything. You're not Marvis. It's your opinion. So Rav Kook right away explains that the reason for this, he says, Avaloy mipnei shehan nistaris mat'imim leba'aris, doesn't mean chas v'shalom, that the secrets of Torah somehow shtim, somehow fit better foolishness and a certain intellectual numbness. That's not the case, God forbid. Not because it's a better fit. It's just it's the nature of the person, that person, that he'll be more likely to be drawn to that. But the Ramban was very bright, and the Vilna Gaon was very bright, and the Arizal, and so on and so forth. It's not God forbid that there's something inherent in Nistaris, in Sisrei Torah, that makes it less of an intellectual challenge. It's just that's the nature of that limud, as we were just discussing. You see, in other areas of Torah, Rav Kook explains, in other areas of Torah, let's say in learning a pshat in the Gemara, understanding a Taisus, learning a Rashi very carefully, a Pasuk Chumash Rashi, understanding when you're learning a din in Shulchan Aruch, when you're learning a halacha properly, of course, all that contains within it the spark of Elokus. It's all godliness. It's all Elokus. The difference is that when you're learning a page of Gemara, or you're learning a halacha, or a pshat and pasuk, when you're learning that, the nitzaitz hasichli ha'elyoin, that supernal spark of the higher mind of Hashem, is mistatwa the hischakmus. It's covered and concealed by the hischakmus. What's the hischakmus? By the cleverness. By the cleverness of the subject that you're learning. That's why it's possible for a person to be learning Gemara and Tosfos, learning Chumash and Rashi, and he doesn't have to be any bigger tzaddik for it. Doesn't necessarily make him into a bigger tzaddik. Forget about the whole thing of mitoshel elish malot. I'm not talking about that. Doesn't have to make the biggest tzaddik. If you don't believe it, then we don't have to go on a grand tour to find proofs of this. You can just look in the mirror. Doesn't necessarily make a person into a tzaddik. The fact that you're learning good blood Gemara. Why not? It's not elokus. The blood Gemara is not elokus. The Chumash Rashi is not elokus. It's all elokus. Yeah, the chiluk is that in the blood Gemara, the elokus is the elokus is very much covered by and plays a secondary role to the hischakmus, to the cleverness that's on the surface, the brilliance and the cleverness of the svaris, of the logic of Torah that is right there in your face when you're learning. So those who are sharp and those who are clever are naturally taken by the cleverness and sharpness that hovers upon the surface of all Divrilikim Chaim, of all of the words of God. They're naturally taken by that. This chakmus. It's beautiful. This chakmus is beautiful. The symmetry. The perfection of the logic of Torah is something that's beautiful to behold. But the hischakmus of it, that cleverness, that brilliance, that logic, can also serve as a cover, a veil, that conceals the nitzaitz ha'eloki, the spark of God, that is in that, that gives life to those words. That's the root and source of those words. Therefore, a person who really likes, who really enjoys intellectual stimulus, will find a black and white fascinating. My wife read an article to me, I don't know where it was, but she read an article to me a few months ago where, I know this sounds odd, but that in, I think in Korea or in Japan, that in Japan, that it's becoming more and more part of the curriculum to study Talmud. That the Japanese, that they're trying to learn Gemara in Japan. Not Indian Shemitah, it's Al HaSinai. Was he have a shaykhis to... It's not enough for terrorists to say that because Jews are eating sushi on Central Avenue, that therefore Japanese have to learn Gemara in Tokyo. That doesn't make sense. So what is it that... Because anybody that's familiar with the mohus of Ruba de Ruba of the people that come from that part of the world, that specific part of the world, is that they fit much more into the reality division of life. That's why the Americans, who are much more fuzzy, that has to do with the very deep chilik between East and West. But the Americans, who by nature are very, very fuzzy, they have a hard time keeping up in math and science with the Chinese, the Japanese, and the Koreans. They have a very hard time with them. They wish they wouldn't have come here. They give them a hard time because they're usually much, much faster and sharper when it comes to math and science, usually. And there's generally, these are all very broad generalizations, and all broad generalizations have obviously a tremendous margin of error. But broadly speaking, the Chinese and the Japanese, that part of the world, there's much more of a tviya for the cold sharpness of the intellect. It's only a matter of time till some Japanese guy would decide that maybe this would help our progress, our way of thinking by studying the Talmud, because the way of reasoning and logic in the Gemara is something that does not exist to such a degree anywhere else in the world, and it's been discovered. I'm not talking about an isolated thing. My wife is reading to me that they're trying to weave it into the curriculum of the public school systems in Japan and Korea. They do have it right. So I don't know what they're learning. What do they learn? Bava Kamba of Mitzvah, the Stamadah learning the Zika. I don't know what they're learning, but...
A check with art school.
Yeah.
They had a whole camera, like, crew came and videotaped one of the Shiva Dan's trial. It was like the whole thing.
And that there were Japanese that were coming there probably to see how to do it. This has tremendous potential for art scroll, no? Like a couple hundred million people, I don't know, like half the world lives over there. Next thing you're going to see is they're going to have like a Malava Malka. It's going to be big Malava Malka art scroll. And they're going to get people to sponsor, even though the Japanese don't know it's been sponsored already 45,000 times over. They're going to get for the Yushalmi, for the Bali. This is great for business. And if Eden can make more money from this, then it's all Kedai. Oh, are you kidding? You can make a Siam and Siam. Yeah, with sushi. So what's the Indian? The Indian is that there's such a drisha for behirus that they have in that part of the world. That it has to do with East as opposed to West. The West, the Teva of the West, the whole nature of the West, Ma'arav is from what Lashon? Eruv. What does Eruv mean? Mixture and confusion. The Western world is very, very fuzzy. They thrive on fuzziness. Things are not sharp and clear. Mizrach comes from the word what? Zoreach. Zoreach means what? Something is shining and clear. And there's a very, very big reason why Bechlal, Anshe Hamayrev, the people of the West can live in such a fuzzy world of opinions. Everything is opinions. This makes you feel good. It's okay, then it's true. That's all it takes in America and England. You feel if this is you like this, it's your truth. It's whatever. That was the root of a very popular school. It's hard to believe, but there was a very popular school of philosophy in the late 19th century and early 20th century called the School of Relativism. And as the word, as you hear in the word, truth is a matter of what's relative. It's all relative to how you feel about something, what you think about something. That's a purely Western idea. Any Chinese or Japanese person would laugh at the absurdity of such a thing. You can't sell that to a Chinaman for $1 million, such a thing as relativism. How does this make you feel? If you feel that it's true, it must be true. So what Rav Kook is saying is that it's not that Avalevim Neshan is Torah Smat Imen Labarus, not because God forbid Sisrei Torah, the material is easy. And that's why people who are less intellectual might be more drawn to it. That's not why. It's because the spark of God in revealed Torah is more covered by, is more concealed by what? By the hischakmus, by the outer brilliance and logic that appeals to the intellect. But when the light, when the oftentimes misleading light of the intellect becomes dimmed, Misoireris had tshuka shel nitzoitz ha'elyon shebeseichel. Then what? Then the tshuka, the longing for that higher spark of the seichel, that which is higher than the human intellect, becomes awakened, becomes aroused. There's a friend of mine in yeshiva that is a big, big Maimonidean. Everything, he made fun of chassidus, he made fun of all these things all the time. And his whole thing was lamdas and seichel and this. That was all until his little sister was killed in a car accident, Hashem Yirachim. And I remember having long talks with him after the shiva. Long talks with me after the shiva. And he wanted to sit down and we were learning together. He wanted to learn something in chassidus and in Pnimius HaTorah. Remember, this was going on for around 2 weeks after the shiva. And his name was Avi. And he said to him, Avi, how come the Rambam's not doing it for you? Why don't you do a little brisk alumnus? And he said, now that's not helping me. So now he's not a brisker. After, by shiva, he's not a brisker. After shiva. So, what happened to this person, Lo Aleinu, was a wonderful guy, we're still in touch. What happened to him is that the hischakmus that was satisfying and filling his life, suddenly things didn't make sense. Didn't fit into his categories of thought. You could say there are two dinim, but if you have a sister that was killed, then the two dinim doesn't help you. And there's a din of my sister when she was alive, and there's a din of my sister when she's dead. Hashem Yirachem. So the hischakmus, there are times in life where the hischakmus, there's no good translation for this, the hischakmus, but there are times where the cleverness just doesn't work for you. In the cleverest of people. There are times when the cleverness just doesn't work. And the person is filled with a longing for the nitzaitza eloki, for the spark of elokus that is higher than any human intellect. And he wants more than anything to be able to dive into the irrational ocean of Pnimius HaTorah. Because only in that world will something that's irrational make sense. You follow? It's only in that world then one can make sense out of what's irrational, that doesn't make sense. Because in that world that's Ein Sof, that's infinite, it's not a kasha bechlal. All of the, it's interesting, the Haggadah, it's Erev Rosh Chodesh. You see that the Haggadah is filled with questions, yeah? It's built around questions. There we show the Rosh, it seems that the Pshat and the Rosh is that he also is the Raisa. That it's from the Torah that the Haggadah has to be given over in such a way of questions and answers. And even towards the end, the piyut of Echad Miyadeh, Shnai Miyadeh, with questions. It's a very unusual thing that the Sipa of Yitzhak Zayim takes place in such a way, with questions. And the questions are personal, it's good. And there's a lot to talk and learning. And to understand, kashas and terutzim. But then something happens at the very, very end of the Haggadah, which we have a minute to say. What's the last thing we say in the Haggadah? Haggadya. And then a shir, which we'll understand why in a minute, we'll talk about that. But Haggadya, which is brought down. You know, there was a maestro, there was a yid that made fun of the Chagadya. So maestro with the Archaim HaKadosh, and the person was put into, the Archaim HaKadosh said he has to be put into Chayim, but Chidah. I don't remember if it was the Archaim HaKadosh or the Chidah. That the person should be put in the chayim for making fun. He was making a joke about the Chagadya. Well, like it's a little children's little thing, Chagadya. First, the Rebbe Bunuf Pshischa said that the author of the Haggadah is Eliyahu Navi. We don't know who the author of the Haggadah is. The Rebbe Bunuf Pshischa said that it's Eliyahu Navi. He says the Lashon Baruch Hamok and Baruch Hu, those Lashonis, you find in Pirkei Avot Eliyahu, in Tanit Eliyahu. That's where you find those Lashonis, in Tanit Eliyahu, in Chazal. The Lashonis of Eliyahu Navi are very similar to some of the Lashonis in Haggadah. And the Rebbe Ben Pshischa says that the Indian of the Mechaber, the author of the Haggadah is Eliyahu Navi. What does it mean when we have in the Gemara Teiku, when there's something that we don't understand? What does it stand for? Tishbi Yitarat Kushi Yisuyabayis. It means that we're waiting for Eliyahu Navi to come and to answer the questions, right? So the Haggadah ends, where came from this Chagadya? Stama came from the same world of Eliyahu Navi. If he himself didn't put it together, then one of his shluchim put together the Chagadya. The Chassam Sofer writes that you look in the Chagadya, the Chassam Sofer says it, there's a problem with the Chagadya. There's a very serious problem with the Chagadya. Chagadya, the Zaman Abba Bisrei Zuzai. So, does everybody like the little goat? We all like the goat, no? It's an innocent little behemoth, Chagadya. What happened to this behemoth? It's a nice behemoth, he's minding his own business. Chagadya, the Zaman Abba Bisrei Zuzai. Then what? Va'asa? What happened? Va'asa? Shunu Vach Lagadya, right? So a cat came and it went and killed the Gedi. Do we like the cat? No. We don't like the cat. The cat is a villain. The Gedi was sweet. And then Vasa Shunya, Vacha Lagadya. So we don't like the cat. Then what comes afterwards? Vasa Kalba, right? So a dog comes. The Noshach Lashunya. Do we like the dog? Sure we like the dog. You know why? Because why do we like the dog? The dog gave a pass to the Rasha. The cat was a Rasha. He bothered the Gedi. So we like the dog. The dog is a good guy, right? Because the Shunra, the cat, is a villain over here. So Vasa Kabba Vnashach L'Shunra. So the dog comes and he teaches the cat a lesson. So the whole Chagadi goes like that. Rasha Tzadik, Rasha Tzadik, Rasha Tzadik. Right? This is simple cheshbon. And you can go like that forever. The problem is that the end, there's a very big problem. Chassam Sofer says at the end, Vosa Malach HaMavis V'Shachal HaShayich. It comes out, if you follow the cheshbon through, we don't have time to go through the whole Chagadi now, but if you follow the cheshbon through, it comes out that the Malach HaMavis did a good thing. The Shaykh was a bad guy. But it comes to him to shech the axe if you just keep the cheshbon. So it comes out according to the Cheshbon, that the Malach HaMavis, was a good guy, because the Shaykh deserved to get shechted. Because he only shechted the axe that was a Rasha. So. Shechted the sorry that was at Tzadik. So it comes out like that. The Malach HaMavis is a good guy, the angel of death. He shechted the Shaykh. The Shaykh deserved to die, because in the Cheshbon the Shaykh is a Rasha. Shaykh is a bad guy. He's a villain. So the Malach HaMavis comes out looking good. So then, God forbid, if you follow the Cheshbon, not allowed to follow the Cheshbon. Then what comes out? The Malach HaMavis is a good guy. The angel does a good guy because he shechted the shechted is a bad guy. Then the last thing we say is Vasa Kadosh Baruch Hu v'shach l'malach hamavis. Ve'ena peyoch l'hagid, right? We're not allowed to say. comes out according to the Cheshbon, that Kosh Baruch Hu, Kosh Baruch Hu shechted Malcham Ovis. Malcham Ovis is a good guy, because he shechted the Shaychet, who's a bad guy. So comes out, Chas V'Sholom, V'Asa Kosh Baruch Hu. So what does that mean? She's all throwing the towel and stopping on film. V'Asa Kosh Baruch Hu V'Shachel Malcham Ovis, V'Avos. But the Malcham Ovis is a good guy. So Tzaddikim say, Rolson writes about this in Amusi Techa, but it's in the Sparma Kedoshim. Chassam Sofer has a Mahalach there. The Chassam Sofer, the whole Chagad is unbelievable. But it says in the Sparm, it's Taka Kasha. It's a good Kasha. It's a bigger Kasha than the Manishtan. Because every one of us can live a Chometz, a Matzah, no? Mara Shayirak is not such a big kasha. Those are not such hot kashas. Halayla is a kolon masubim. Because they're free, so kolon masubim. Avodim ilo par mitzvahim. So it's such a kasha. Manishtan is such a kasha. Now, the kasha in Bechagadi is a much, much bigger kasha. So I'm familiar with teretz. What's the teretz to the kasha? No?
It's all starting the wrong way.
Should be what?
We should look at it in a different view, not one on one.
Should look at it in a different way. In what different way? In what different way?
Mathematically, it makes sense, but there's something more than that.
Yeah. Exactly. The whole point of the Haggadah, the whole point of Pesach, is to bring us to Amunah. And the whole hashpah of the Amunah of Pesach is to bring us to that Nekudas HaNefesh that does not look at that does not need a mathematical equation to answer why I'm a Jew. That's the whole lima that we're teaching the children. So the Teretz is Taka Kasha, and Tishbi Taretz Kushvus V'Ayis. And by the time you get to the end of the Seder, you don't need to have a solution to the mathematical problem of a good kasha. No, Eleonovi is going to come. Tish be tarz kushus for bayis. V'asa kash baruch hu b'shachal malacham avis. It's the very presence of the malacham avis that confuses us. That is able to ask such kashas. That is able to weave things in such a way to get you so confused and so mixed up that he ends up looking like he's a good guy. That's the way the Malacham Avos works. The Palestinians are the Jews, and the Jews are the Nazis, right? The Israelis are the Nazis, and the Palestinians are the Jews. Chagadya. But that's what's going on. That's how the Malacham Avos operates. V'asa kash boruch until that day, v'asa kash boruch v'shachal the Malacham Avos. The whole inyan of emunah is to come to that Madrega within oneself, that I don't need to have terutzim for these kashas. Because the truth is that even when it comes to Manishtana, they're not particularly good terutzim. If you look at it, the Haggadah is like if a kid would be really, really smart kid, like it's like a little Rogachev sitting at the Seder. So after the Manishtana, he has the kashas, and then the father says, Avodim ilo par mitzvahim. So the Rogachev would say, that's a terrorist. No, the Yibichla didn't even answer what I don't know what he's talking about. I've heard the English Bible sign. Okay, so all the thousands and thousands of Perushim and Haggadah are coming to explain how Avodah Mayinu is taki telling us that there was Cheirus and Avdus, so that's where there's Matzah and Emor. But the Rabbi Chavu could slug up all of that in a second. In a second. And the Emes says it could all be slugged up. So the Rabbi Shalom puts us through this strange thing by Pesach, which is the Yontif of Emunah. It's the Rosh Hashanah of Emunah. Pesach is the Rosh Hashanah of Emunah. So the Rabbi Shalom puts us through a very strange thing. He puts us through a thing where nowhere else do we find in Torah that the Inyan is Dafka with Kashas. And here the Rabbi Shalom filled the Haggadah with Kashas. That's not something that they made up. It says in the Torah, Ki Yishol Chabin Chamach Alayma. In Chumash it's written as a Kasha. Ki Yishol Chabin Chamach. Your children are going to ask. That's why we do that. It's the questions. And if a kid's really smart, so he comes to a question, he asks a question, the father doesn't have a teretz. So then what? It's I see this guy. We're finished. That's the end of it. Chas v'shalom. The whole chinuch of Seder night, that it's a yontiv of emunah, is to bring ourselves and our children to a point where the kashas don't bother us. The kashas don't throw us off at all. Because in that place of emunah, we know that there's something that's called v'asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How does it work out scientifically, mathematically, according to the Cheshbon of Chagiga, that v'asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's exactly the point, it doesn't work out. Just like for my friend who lost his little sister, it didn't work out, the Cheshbon. And there's only one thing that will work out for you at that time, and that's what? V'asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If Hashem Zbach arrives in your life. Because he's the only one that could shech those confusion. He's the only one that could shech the Malach HaMavis. So what Rav Kook is saying over here is that when the dim light of what? Of math, of cleverness is not working. When it's fading. When it's not there. There is an awakening of that spark, that highest spark of the seichel. So in a person who doesn't thrive on the intellectual sharpness, he's naturally more sensitive and attuned to the nitzoitz of elokus that transcends common sense and what's rational. Which can sometimes make these people hard to handle. Even in their physical way of going about things, they oftentimes are not neat. The more mathematical person, where everything fits into reason and logic, is more likely to have his shirt tucked in and his beard trimmed or pinned up neatly. The one who is less inclined to mathematical formulas is more likely to have the shirt out. I'm using that as a marshal. There are different ways that one's shirt could be out even while it's tucked in. Maybe he's not so masudah. Everything is not, doesn't have to be pink lechazoi, exactly like that. Doesn't have to be exactly like that. Because he doesn't live in a world of exactness. Everybody knows whether you're a chassid or a misnagid, it's much more relaxing to be among chassidim. Just on a very simple level, it's much more relaxing. Just that's how it is. If you've ever spent time with either group, you'll know that it's much more relaxing to be this. I'm not saying that it's a Maila or a Chazaron. I'm just saying it's a Metzias. It's what they would say nowadays in the terminology of the street. They're much more chilled out. But they're more chillaxed. Right? They're much more chilled out. Hazoy. You go by the strong literature, Ms. Nyssen. Why is it like that? Why are you saying that? Because this is an Afghan minute. Because I like to. It's just like, Why you hold that way? I feel like that. But it's so clear and it's so obvious. And here the Svadish should go straight with the Chassidim in that whole thing. Even though there's more of an intensity by the Svadish in general. But as far as not demanding an answer, letting something go without having a clear proof, is the difference between Mizrach and Ma'arav. Mizrach and Ma'arav. The inyan of the Chassidim and the Svadim is Mizrach. The inyan of the Misnagdim and the Litvisha is Ma'arav. But it should be just the opposite. With the Mizrach, there's a yichud that takes place over here. Because Mizrach means Zarech, means clarity. And Ma'arav means confusion. But it was Davke in the West that intellectualism became the primary way of reaching things through reason and ration, as opposed to the East. So there's a yichud that takes place between those two worlds when it comes to Klal Yisrael. And that's what's going to be when Mashiach comes, when the Baal Shem Tov and the Vilna Gaon are going to lead us together with all the other tzaddikim to greet Mashiach. But that's a remarkable thing. So Rav Kook says, Now, the person who is more fuzzy and therefore is more attracted to the Seichel HaElyon, to the higher spark of God. So Rav Kook is saying that, of course, you can't reach the truth. That doesn't mean that the person doesn't have to use his mind and his intellect. He has to have Yishuv Hadas. He can't just go with a feeling. When you're learning Kisvei Ha'ari, when you're learning Sisvei Torah and the stars, it's not just fluff, Chas V'Shalom. So even though the attraction is more for that personality, but no matter who you are, you have to sit down and learn. Kim Kishayoshu V'Yamik B'Chochma V'Das V'Kishon, to go deeply into Chochma and Das and Kishon, is all the Koich HaSeichel. And then Rav Kook says, "Oz yegil midazu sheyedes erachis hakmus anoishes v'chul shasa." Then not only will you understand what's in the stars, but you'll understand the weakness of human intellect. You'll have a greater understanding of how weak, in truth, how weak human intellect is, and the flimsiness of human cleverness, and how the deepest thing in the world is elokus. And that the person, by combining the use, that's what I was talking about a minute ago, the yichud of the two worlds of the Baal Shem Tov and the Vilna Gaon, that by using both seichel and the nitzoytz eloki, and with the seichel, with sharp human intellect, but with humility, and that sharp intellect going into the depths of nistaros, of pnimis etara, then the netiyah that person has, the inclination towards things that are less sharp, that inclination was necessary and was useful to bring him to Elokus, to the Nitzayt Eloki. But now that he's there, he has to use Seichel. A combination, of course. That nature that he has, together with the Seichel, that Yichud, of Mizrach and Ma'arav, of East and West. To be a questioning person, that's how we learn. To be somebody that questions, to be somebody with logic, and somebody who analyzes. But it's all in the world of the Asa Kadosh Baruch. It's all in the world of Ein Seif, Ein Kelokeinu, Ein Kadeneinu. Afterwards you could ask, Michel Lokeinu, Michel Adeneinu. The Baal Shem Tov taught that. That's what we say. First you begin, Ein Kelokeinu, Ein Kadeneinu. Ein Kemalkeinu, Ein Kemalishin. There is, it's only God. Everything is God. That's clear. That's the Nitzayt Eloki. That's godliness. Ein Kelokeinu. It's not a matter of philosophy or skepticism. It's a truth. It's an unquestioned, absolute truth. Ein Kelokeinu. With that firmly set in your heart and in your mind, then you could talk in learning. Then you could already talk. Mi Kelokeinu, Mi Kadeneinu. Ask questions. But it's Ein Kelokeinu. Ein Kelokeinu. After the Seder, a person is able to say Shir Hashir. Only those who have a connection to Nistaris know what it means to say Shir Hashirim after the Seder. Those who have no connection to Nistaris go Shlufen. They go to sleep. Or they talk over in some learning, if they're more of that type. But those who are in this Sugya that we're learning are not able to go to bed without saying Shir Hashirim. Not only that it's a minig that's found in the Svarim, and therefore it's a good thing to have to try to somehow, it's so late and you're so tired, they schlep your way through Shir Hashirim. It's the highlight of the night. It's the absolute tachlis to come to that point, to be able to say, Shir Hashirim HaShem L'Shalish HaKeim HaNishikai Spiyah. Because Shtiyo Hulon Mitzasi, all my life I'm seeking this clarity, this truth of being together with you. And I haven't found it yet. But only a person who lives in the stars knows that Shir Hashirim is not extra. Shir Hashirim is indispensable. Those who are not connected to this, or in the world of the eschakmus of cleverness, the emes says they would do without Chagad Yitur. But they say it because they're religious and they don't want to do something wrong. They're good people, but they would manage without Chagad Yitur. They could do without the whole piyud, without Echad Miyudein also. The Emes says, after the fourth Kais, they're finished. How long did it say? No, it's in the simanim, you have to say it. But the really, once you made the bracha achrayna for the philosophers, once you finished with the bracha achrayna at the fourth kais, what's the fun anymore? We already finished the four kaises. There's nothing else to talk about. We're done. Halal nitzah, that's for the Kabbalists. Halal nitzah is for the romantic Shir Shirim people. But you see how it was made into the simanim of the Haggadah of the Seder? And it's called the Seder. And how it was set up with such mathematical precision, the Seder? Kaddish Orchas Kabbalist Yachatz. And with Kashis and Terutzim. And then how does it all end? All of the Seder and all of the math is blown to pieces. And you sit down at the end of the Seder and you say, Shir Shir Mashal Lashon. Yishakeim Nishikos Piyuki Toivim Dadecha Meyayim. Lebeach Shemenecha Toivim Shema Tuvak Shemecha. Al Kein Alomes Ahivucha. Mashcheni Acherecha Merutza. What happened to all the math? What happened to all the Seder? The Seder, you person of Seder. You're so Masudah. So the answer is, he doesn't say Shir Shir. But the whole Tachlis is to come to Shir Shir. The whole Tachlis is to come to that, to the Or of Emunah. Where, it's once it's also HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then it's one thing, it's Mashcheni HaKarech HaNautza. Heviyani HaMelech HaDorav, Nagilav V'nismach HaBach. There can't be any greater joy. How can you be happy if you're left with so many unanswered questions? It says that there's no simcha like Atharas HaSveikas. What joy could a person have? There are kashas without terutzim. Only a person who believes in God can know what that joy is. Only a person who believes in the Rabbanu Shalom B'Amunah Shleimah knows what the simcha is, and you can live in a world with all of the kashas. You can live with all of the kashas, and you can say, V'asa kash baruch v'shach alam al hamavis, akashi. Shir Shir Hashem Shalom. And if you don't live with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, then your whole life, your whole mathematical life, and all of the Seder that you're looking for is just a matter of time until your Seder is blown apart by something that doesn't make sense. I mean, that doesn't make sense comes into your life, and you have to try to make sense out of it. You can't do it without Shir Shir. That's what the world is suffering from. That's what many Jews are suffering from. That's what Cook says. Then the natiya that he has towards the mysterious, towards godliness, towards that which is irrational, when it's together with working at it hard and understanding it, what's left here is a beautiful, his natiya is only for the purpose of his kashrus and masechel elyon, to be bound together with that transcendent seichel, the elokus, the godliness, hanavei mehaziv ha'eloki, that is shining and coming from the ziv ha'eloki. That ray of Elokus, that light of Elokus, b'chol toikif tif'arta, b'chol toikif tif'arta. The biggest simcha is when we say chasal seder Pesach ke'il chasai. When do you say chasal seder Pesach? Do you say before Shir Shir, or do you say after Shir Shir? Say before. Chasal seder Pesach ke'il chasai. Means that the Siddur Pesach, the Seder Pesach is done. And now we're going to dive into the mysterious and deep world of Shir Shir. Into the infinite. Chasal Siddur Pesach Kil Chasai. Kein Niska La HaSoysai. We should be Zoycha to say the words, we should be Zoycha to do it. And to do it means, with that brand, with that fire, that only a Shir Shir Yid can enjoy the pleasure of being up to his knees in the blood of the Korban Pesach. Because it doesn't make sense. Why would the greatest joy of a Jew be standing up to his knees in blood? First of all, most of us shower on a regular basis. And people are already thinking, how am I going to get this blood off before Yom Tov? So it's also a big kasha. Like the people ask a kasha, how are we all going to manage with the Korban Pesach? What's going to be all these kashas? And Tishbi Tarez Kushis Vayas. Elianovi, who's the author of the Haggadah, says, Adkan Chasal Seder Pesach. What comes after Chasal Seder Pesach? Noch Seder Pesach comes already. The Chasal Seder Pesach is Lashon HaBob Yushalayim and Shir Shirim. That's when the Seder goes beyond the Seder. No. Kasha Zachin Lasadeh Oisai, Kainis Kalah Asaisa Dugulashna Ramitis.